Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. So, who are you anyway? Do you know who you are? Or could you be anybody? Or could you be nobody? Or could you be everybody? We're going to find out. We're going to be talking to a nobody.
A real nobody.
A real nobody who's learned about being a nobody. In part by being a somebody. And otherwise. And so this would be a fascinating conversation about who we really are, or who we really aren't, or who we don't need to be, or maybe it's better not to be. We don't know. And so there's a wonderful book that I've really loved digesting called Be Nobody. And it's written by my guest, who's in the studio, I'm so happy about that, is Lama Marut. Welcome, Lama Marut.
Thank you, Peter. It's nice to be here.
And you have a name, and yet you have lots of names. Mm. Not everybody calls you Lama Marut.
Not everyone does. No, Lama means spiritual teacher. Marut is the name I was given when I ordained as a Buddhist monk. So it's a sort of professional name to describe one of my roles. But my given name is Brian Smith, and lots of people call me that, and my wife calls me Brian, and some people call me Dr. Smith when I was working in the university, and Professor Smith. So these are all just labels. These are all just names. It's interesting, the given name that I have, Brian Smith, Brian, of course, is the name that my parents gave me, but Smith is my paternal name, a patrilineal name. And if I go back two generations, my grandfather was an orphan and was left on the steps of an orphanage in England in the late 19th century with no note. And so the orphanage gave him the most common generic name of England at the time, Smith. And so it doesn't take me too long personally to go back to being a kind of a generic human being.
Right. I was thinking that maybe one of the better names for nobody would be Joe Schmo.
Yeah, I talk about that in the book, Ordinary Joe, Becoming an Ordinary Joe, realizing that we're all fundamentally ordinary Joes. We're all special. We're all unique. We're all like unique snowflakes. Nobody's like inherently specialer than anyone else. If we're all special, you could say nobody's special.
But one thing I like in the book, many things I like in the book, but one thing was that we're all struggling to believe in ourselves, to identify ourselves in that belief. And so, therefore, we're all the same. No matter how strongly we come up with a belief in ourselves, it's the same as everybody else.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Doing the same thing.
That's right. I mean, the over-attachment to the individual self, the over-emphasis on your particularity or individuality and so forth can blind us to our commonalities. And I think has in the modern world, in the world that we live in, we are increasingly self-centered and kind of obsessed with the self. And the culture sort of encourages that. People have said this is a culture of narcissism, and I think we see that all over the place.
It's amazing that we create these icons out there of movie stars and sports stars that have their own ego troubles, and they need to look good and to flaunt their materialism and their success in ways that so many people feel less than.
And envious of and wanting to be. I mean, there's a lot of apparently television shows. I don't watch them, but apparently a lot of television shows, the whole premise of which is an ordinary person suddenly gets elevated to fame. All these talent shows, The Voice, and then the so-called reality shows. Because everyone wants to be a star. Everyone wants to be a celebrity. And so there's the cult of narcissism includes the cult of celebrity.
I remember when my kids were young, and I was taking on a lot of community roles, and I was the head of the soccer league, and I was also one of the heads of the New York City Marathon, and my younger son at one point said, "Dad, you're famous." And I said, "Well, everybody's famous in their family."
That's right. That's right. And that's the important fame, after all. You know, it's important to have, you know, to have good, strong relationships, personal relationships, and to have, you know, and to have a sense that you are, you know, that you're doing an important part, you know, playing an important part in the world. But, you know, we all kind of want to be more than just who we are, you know, more of a somebody.
Well, the way to be more of a somebody you talk about in the book, because you talk about people saying, "What about me?" And instead you are saying to them, we should say, "How can I help you?" Mm. And so we become more of a somebody when we're of service.
That's right. That's right. That's a very key point in the book. You pegged it. Fortunately, Peter has actually read the book, so we can discuss this intelligently. But no, this is one of the main arguments in the book, is that you know, we oftentimes feel like we're going to become more of a somebody by thinking more about ourselves and becoming even more self-centered than we already are, and, you know, trying to aggrandize the ego and, you know, and the somebody self. But actually, the source of feeling better about ourselves, the real source of feeling better about ourselves, is dropping the constant, you know, inner narrative, "What about me, what about me, what about me," and losing ourselves in service to others, in our activities, in our work, and so forth. So not to be so self-conscious is actually the best way to feel better about yourself.
Well, that's a very important point, and you make that very point very, very well in the book, helping to understand how to get out of our own way by not being in our head all the time and actually start participating. And you illustrate many ways that we can submerge ourselves into activity, into purpose, where we're not caught up by ourselves.
Well, that's right. And if you look at anyone looks at their own experience, they will discover rather quickly that we feel happiest, most content, most satisfied with life when we drop the self-consciousness and the somebody self and get absorbed into something, you know, other than ourselves. So this is kind of what defines a good book. It's, you know, is that you lose yourself in the book. You know, you're not sitting there self-consciously reading every word and, you know, dissecting the sentence structure. You're lost in the narrative. A good movie, the same thing. And there's lots of instances of this in our lives. We have experience, personal experience. This is the hobbies. This is the whole attraction of a hobby, is that you can, you know, really get into it, get into the zone, get into the, you know, the flow of the activity. And some people find this in their work, if they're fortunate. And this is when we're happiest. It's kind of instructive. It's pointing to a very deep truth, that we're happiest when we stop being somebody and can lose ourselves into something bigger than ourselves.
When we're in the universal mind.
Yeah.
And that's also an aspect of spirituality, too.
Of course. The spiritual traditions have always... no authentic spiritual tradition has ever argued that you'll feel happier by being more self-centered, more self-conscious, more selfish. Quite the opposite. You know, they've all encouraged us to drop the lower self and to, in order to discover our higher self, our true nature, our deeper self.
And yet, there are a lot of monks who become hermits in a way, and yet their job isn't to cycle in on themselves. Their job is to cycle out to the universe.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. To find the deeper true nature that we all share universally, and no one has more of that nature, true nature, than anyone else. We all have it equally, and it's there, accessible to us at any time. It's always with us.
Right.
And that's a deeper self that needs no self improvement. It's been perfect from beginningless time. It's never been born. It will never die. And to get in touch with that, and we do, we don't recognize that we're getting in touch with that sometimes when we have these experiences of losing ourselves in an activity, or, you know, or even in sex. You know, good sex is losing yourself. If you're sitting around like being self-conscious in sex, you know, that's not good sex. So we have these sort of ordinary experiences of what it feels like to drop the somebody self and access what I call the nobody self, which is our true nature.
Well, you talk in the book about karma yoga, and you talk about it as disciplined mindfulness. Mm. So therefore, we are caught up in our mindfulness, being correct in our mindfulness, that we can talk more about Buddhism that way, correct mindfulness. Mm. And yet, it has to include unself-consciousness.
Yeah, that's right. Karma yoga is a technique taught in the Bhagavad Gita and other texts from the Hindu tradition on how to act without over attention to what you're going to get out of the action. In other words, to focus one pointedly on what you're doing without like having a large part or some part of your mind thinking, well, is this going to benefit me? You know, what am I going to get out of it? What's the goal here? And to just focus on the action in and of itself. And when we do that, then we can, number one, we can get very, very one-pointed about the action and do it with much more efficiency than like constantly, you know, thinking about, you know, is this going to work out? Am I going to benefit, et cetera, et cetera? And secondly, we can lose ourselves in the action. We can merge the actor and the action into a kind of a whole. And this is also another way that we can access, you know, what it feels like to be nobody in action. By being fully engaged in this sort of, as I said, mindful unself-consciousness. Of course, mindfulness has to be there; otherwise, you're going to make a mess of it. But not the self-consciousness need not be there. This is exactly what the psychologists are talking about when they're talking about the flow state. Getting into the flow state is losing yourself in action. That's challenging. It has to be a little challenging because, you know, otherwise we don't find it interesting. So a little challenging and so forth. But without that kind of self-consciousness, and with that kind of dominates so much of our lives, you know, that little right. voice inside.
So the mind actually points you to correct action. So the mind says, you know, we're going to have a good time doing this. Let's get into this action. And this action is a well-serving action because it's good for everybody. It serves ourselves and humanity or whatever. And so it's a good action. So that's the mind.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you're in the action, and you also get into this very nicely in the book, it's when you're in the action then it becomes you.
Yeah. You lose yourself in the activity itself. Another example of this is in play. When you, especially children are very, very good at it. Adults have kind of screwed up play and have made it.
Yeah, purposes
yeah.
and ego needs.
Exactly. Who's going to win? Who's going to lose? But pure play is not about winning and losing. It's just play. So there's no real goal involved. You know, there's no goal involved in sliding down a slide. It's not, the purpose of sliding is not to get to the bottom. The purpose of that activity is the sliding, not to have slid. And so that's another example of sort of action for its own sake, pure action for its own sake, where again, the all the goals and what about me and what am I going to get out of it is all dropped. And then you fully merge yourself with the activity that you're involved in.
And that's very important about learning how to choose better which activities you want to be consumed by, because you want to be in that nobody place, mm-hmm. in the action,
mm-hmm.
so that it's fulfilling in spirit.
Yes. Yeah, I've sort of come to the conclusion when it comes to, for example, a job. You know, everyone's probably, you know, except if you, the trust fund, you know, babies, everyone's probably has a job, has to work. And a good job, it seems to me, is a job that you like, of course, that you're, you know, that you find interesting and attractive, but also that you're good at, that you're pretty good at, that you're talented. Some people, you know, like some activities and they're not that good at it. And then some people are pretty good at it and they don't like it. So to have a job that you're good at, that you find interesting and attractive, and then thirdly, that you find like important, meaningful, like, you know, a contribution, you know, some sense that you're contributing to, you know, to the betterment of the world around you. And if those three things come together, then you're very lucky. You got a good job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of somebody, for instance, who's a wonderful artist, a singer, an entertainer, an actor. And she loves to be absorbed by that. Mm. And she's also an amazing healer. Mm. And she sees healing as her karma, that it's an obligation and it's not easy for her. And yet she's wonderful at it.
Mm-hmm.
But she would love to be an actor instead.
Yeah.
And yet both are a service, of great service to humanity.
Yeah. So if all three things come together, that's good, and we fulfill ourselves in the deepest way when we have the opportunity to do activities in which we can, number one, lose the self-consciousness, but number two, feel like we've lost it in the service of something greater than ourselves, something important, something meaningful, something that's changing the world in a positive way.
Yes. And then there's that other picture that is similar to this. It's a little bit different. And you talk about it in the book about what people discuss in the old age home.
Yeah.
And what's really important in our lives. And I've seen that at funerals too. Mm-hmm. What are eulogies about? And it's not counting up how many homes you own or whatever. People don't talk about that at eulogies. They talk about heart.
Yeah. Before my dad died, I used to visit him. He was in assisted care living. And, you know, it was quite clear to me in interacting with him and with other older people that, you know, all the accomplishments, all the money, all the possessions didn't really matter at the end, you know. What really mattered was relationships. You know, do you have anyone that you love, and do you have anyone that loves you? And it kind of comes down to that at the end.
Yeah, and it's sad, in old age homes, because a lot of times people are quite lonely there.
That's right.
And they hang out with each other, and once you've had the conversation about who your family is or your close friends, there's nothing else to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, it all comes down to that, really. It all comes down to your family and close friends and, you know, who loves me and who do I love? I mean, that's what it comes down to. And it would be good for us to remember that before we get into the old folks home.
Yeah, right. And so we become more of the nobody when we're serving others, because then it's about them. And then we become somebody because they love the service that they're getting.
Yeah. It makes us feel better as a somebody to have experiences of being a nobody and losing yourself in service and so forth, or in love with another person. It makes us feel better about being the somebody that we are.
But in love is also of service.
Yeah.
You're not going to have a good relationship if you're not of service to your partner.
Yeah. No, of course, right. Absolutely.
Of service and understanding,
yeah,
cooperation, forgiveness.
As people like us who have had marriages go wrong, no.
Right, right. We've learned from
hopefully
karma. Yeah, but that's what karma is about, is getting it right the next time. And so so you've been on this path, this spiritual path, and it's an opportunity for you to present this book to the world, because so many people need that perspective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not pitched to any particular religion or sect or anything like that. Everyone wants to live a better life. Everyone wants to live a good life, and there are plenty of people in our day and age who have no religious affiliation, don't want a religious affiliation, are wary of, you know, kind of affiliating with an ism or an ology, and that doesn't mean that they don't also want to live a good, fulfilling life. And so this is a book intentionally pitched to not just people who have a, you know, religious affiliation, but to people who don't also.
Right. And another thing is that our outward lives, if they're really based on ego and needing to be somebody, they're based on a lot of external distractions.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about when we're being a nobody rather than a somebody, then there are a lot of things that aren't as important.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it gets very, very simple as a nobody.
Yeah.
In fact, it's so simple that, you know, because you're in that sort of non-self-conscious state, you're not thinking about complexity or simplicity. You're not thinking really at all. You're just living. You see, you're fully living.
It's kind of living in a simple way.
Yeah. I would say more like a pure way, because
I like that.
Yeah, because you're not mediating experience. You know, that little voice inside is mediating our experience of life. It's like a sports announcer or something.
Right, the ego is saying, you know, do we look fancy enough?
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, do we have enough material possessions?
Yeah. Is this going to work out for me? Am I going to, am I going to increase or prosper from this action, et cetera, et cetera? So it's when that little voice shuts up that we can actually integrate into the life that we're leading, that we're living on a moment-to-moment basis.
Well, I always like to say to people, the way I dress, in high school I was voted best dressed, right? Now, most of the time, I'm a plain brown wrapper guy. I just, and a lot of it is because I'm an intuitive and I live an alternate lifestyle that way, and I'm fussy about wanting to be healthy and strong for an old timer. So I really love the simple, pure natures of life. And I don't need to create any flurries, because it's hard enough being alternative, and it attracts people and they look at me, maybe you should have a turban on and a big robe and whatever. It's like, no, plain brown wrapper, thank you. I'm just going to be a nobody.
Yeah. Well, listeners should know that he has a very, very fine, clean t-shirt on right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what color is it?
It's a very, very plain brown wrapper. Brown.
I'm so comfortable that way, because then you move around in the world so much easier.
Yeah, I talk about this in the book in terms of trying to be more of an ordinary Joe instead of like being so special and unique and fabulous. You know, everyone wants to sort of like present themselves as unusual or, you know, unique, especially in a place like New York City and other big cities. And it's actually a very, very, good practice, one that's designed to bring us more happiness because we feel more connected to others, to represent ourselves as more ordinary and less special and extraordinary. And that's learning how to be more of an ordinary Joe instead of, a fabulous, whatever. And that's a very important practice. That's a spiritual practice, the practice of humility, of learning how to be, less special and more connected to other people who are fundamentally just like you.
I recently re-met somebody who I knew when I was a kid, and I knew her about 55 years ago. And she was a kid sister of a good friend of mine, so I didn't know her that well because she was the kid sister. And then she recently confessed to me. She said, I had a crush on you.
Mm-hmm.
I had a picture of you in my wallet year round. And, and I never knew that at all, because she was just the kid sister of a friend. And I looked at her and I was just so humbled by it.
Yeah.
It was just, oh my God, that's such an honor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, it felt so good. and I just felt such love about it.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful. And so there are opportunities for us to be special when we're not looking for it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, it's beautiful to learn that, that other people have this kind of like anonymous love for us. If you find that out. But a more general practice of this is just observing, with gratitude, how much other people are doing for us all the time. you know, the kindness of strangers. You know, when you're traveling, we're on a book tour now. It's amazing, like, if you pay attention, how many people help you out.
And that's something you promote in the book, is to be kind as much as we can, mm-hmm. in ways that aren't to aggrandize our ego.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know people, David Friedman is somebody in mind, who had a project to be kind every day, to have experiences of that he would be kind to people, and not necessarily for his ego, but there are times when actually we need to be there to be kind, to tell people that we recognize the God in them,
yes.
the spirit in them.
Yes.
And then they have to look at us and see that we see them, and so we can't be anonymous that way.
Right.
But there are other ways that we can give gifts to people and yeah. take care of them, that it doesn't have to be about us.
Yeah, and you know, there's I think a two-part sort of process there. First of all, to respect everybody's somebody self. Everyone is unique. Everyone is individual. Everyone's like a particular wave, you know, with its own shape and so forth. And to respect that and to honor that, but at a deeper level, to realize that every wave comes from the same ocean. And to see the oceanness in others, in not just the wave.
That feels so good.
Yeah.
Let's all be in the ocean together.
Yeah.
So this is wonderful to talk about your book called Be Nobody. It's a very attractive title. I like that.
Thank you, Peter.
And your name is Lama Marut, M-A-R-U-T. And how can people find out more?
I have a website, Lama Marut, one word, LamaMarut.org.
Okay. And they can buy your book there, too?
They can find out how to buy the book.
Okay.
The book's supposed to be in all good bookstores. All the bookstores that are left will still in business. And, of course, Amazon.com and so forth.
Yeah, great. And you're having a good time traveling around, promoting it. Be nobody.
Yeah, it's fun. It's been fun. Everyone's a somebody, but underneath we're all the same nobody.
Well, what I like is you really talk about the balance.
Yeah.
That we're allowed to be somebody.
Yeah.
At the same time, we always have to acknowledge our nobody-isms. And keep remembering that about ourselves.
Yeah.
And I love that. So I'm really grateful that you could be on Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. It was a great pleasure.
Great. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you. Please get in touch. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you.